Accession number 12922, Squadron Leader Ronald Meredith, Reel 6.
Squadron Leader Meredith, Reel 6.
Yes, despite these additional costs, which I couldn't possibly attempt to quantify, utilising, say, Francis Pym's earlier analogy of an insurance policy, I think you've got damn good value for it. And certainly it was the first operational missile or Glickham group in NATO, and the lessons that were learnt at Greenham in terms of construction and all the other niceties and problems, for that matter, that we had to overcome, I think made it easier for them to continue with the other sites elsewhere in NATO. But as far as the this relationship goes with the peace people, which we keep coming back to, I had one serious reservation. I say it wasn't my concern because I left to go to another appointment. But it occurred to me that if we ever had, once these missiles came in, if we'd ever had to use them for real, if every convoy is going to be pursued by gangs of these dissident tribeswomen, it really wasn't going to help national or NATO security in any shape or form. And the fact that they were there is not going to stop these missiles being targeted by anybody else. And I think from a practical point of view, and coming down the scale from sort of heaven help us from the threat of global war, the very presence of these people provides a target or a shield, if you like, behind whom could hide bona fide terrorists. I mean, there are enough Muslim countries and forget the IRA, but I think, but certainly people who wish to get their hands on nuclear weapons infiltrating any of these groups, no matter how sincere the real protesters, the real demonstrators, no matter how sincere their feelings. Being so easy for anyone to infiltrate there, and if in fact, as I say, we had to deploy live weapons, bear in mind none of the convoys that ever left the base carried live weapons; those were only training rounds. But if, heaven help us, the situation had been such that we had to deploy with these, then you know they would have provided a shield and a cover for terrorists. And I can imagine if it was declared that you know a terrorist group had got a nuclear weapon. These people would have been protesting. Why hadn't the government done something about it? And yet they're the very people who could have made it so much easier for a terrorist to actually have acquired the damn weapon. So you know, there's a false sense of justice and belief in this on their part, that the very action which they're taking to protest about the missiles could, so in the ultimate, have played into the hands of people who wanted those weapons for ulterior purposes. So I think that is something which never very clearly came across in the media, certainly never came across to me, and I think it's a point that's worth mentioning.
If say there had been a crisis, do you think there would have been tougher action against the women to have prevented something like, say, a blockade of the convoy?
Well, we're into speculation here. We're not into facts. We're into speculation.
I'm wondering how seriously that would have been. That threat would have been met.
I suspect that it would have been dealt with as necessary at the time. If we were in a national crisis, I mean, these things don't happen overnight. The NATO scenario is that Joe Stalin or Gorbachev or whoever was in charge at the time isn't going to wake up with a sore head and say we're going to go to war. And they're not going to sort of hose off missiles. They're going to prepare. They're going to plan to move troops, to deploy troops into start positions. All the intelligence indicators are there. You would gradually build up through what we call the NATO alert state to readiness for war. And as one would transition from peace to war, to prepare for war, then if these people persisted, then obviously they would have to be dealt with by whatever means seemed appropriate at the time. But one would hope that, you know, loyalty as well as national self-preservation might make them decide they ought to go and find themselves in that old bunker to rest in for a while. But I don't think they would have helped the situation if it had come to a shooting war. This would have been a terrible situation. I think they would have been risking themselves as well as national security. You see, the Soviet intelligence system is not stupid. It certainly wasn't in those days, and I don't believe it's any less stupid now, or any more stupid now. Their ability to plot these missiles is quite considerable, I suspect. They would know they were going to be at Greenham Common. As soon as a convoy rolled out of the gates, other people than just the dissidents would probably tell them where they're going. But the fact that each convoy would be followed by a tribe of folks in buses and hippie vehicles and things like this would just make it that much easier for them to counter-target. So, as I say, I think we could have had problems, but as I say, we're in the realms of speculation. We're not into the realms of fact at all at the moment, because I couldn't speculate on what would happen. As far as the security aspect of missiles is concerned, we've got to remember, and again, there was a lot made of this, and I was, I say, I wasn't at Greenham, but I say, all these convoys are vulnerable, the convoys are vulnerable. And going back to the point about enhanced security posture, I say, no live missile ever left the base by convoy. Had it done so, the security arrangements would have been even tighter than they were for the safety of that missile. And the last thing we would want is somebody in the way. If somebody had put themselves under a truck carrying a live weapon on a deployment exercise, the truck might have gone over them. I don't know. I don't think they would have stopped. Not if you're carrying a live one. Simply because, you know, it would only be out there because we're at risk of war. Ergo, I'm afraid, you know, one life for the greater good of many more. But as I say, we're into total speculation here. But as I said, it was an interesting and exciting time. And I don't think the name of Greenham Common will be readily eroded from the annals of UK or NATO history I don't think it will. You know, it's quite a place to have been, and I'm delighted to have been associated with it.
Have you heard anything about the fears of some women that electromagnetic rays were beamed out on them from the gun, from within the gun?
Oh, I did hear this. Yeah, I think it was reported, certainly. No, I can certainly give you assurances that is absolute rubbish. Electromagnetic radiation was all over the place. I mean, they had, during some of the demonstrations, some quite sophisticated electronic equipment. Communications equipment, I'm talking about. We had sophisticated communications equipment, too, because we could listen to them just as easily as they could listen to us. But in terms of the sort of mind-bending beams and things, no, absolute rubbish. I think that sounds to me like an excuse for some of the rather squalid conditions they were living in and all the problems they must have been generating for themselves. They want to blame somebody else, so it's easy enough to blame the military. No, there was nothing like that going on. I don't know of any weapons system that actually works that way. They probably were taking too many happy pills. I don't know.
You live, of course, don't you, in the Greenham area?
I live in the Newbury area.
In the Newbury area, yes. Would you have been at all aware of the deployment of crews and the cruise watch system of the Greenham women?
I was aware of it, as it was reported, yes. But there again, you see, you had a system there which, going back to my earlier point about, you know, making life difficult for us, or the Allies, but making life so much easier for the Warsaw Pact, if you have people maintaining that sort of profile, all they're doing is trying to assist, say, in the final event, the enemy. Yes, the organisation existed. It existed in various forms. How good it was, I'm not sure, but I don't think there are many convoys that got out of the base. I mean, you can't drive a 40-ton articulated wagon or a series of 40-ton articulated wagons down the main road without somebody happening to notice them. Even more so if you've got blue flashing lights in the vicinity. So it doesn't take a very brave or very clever person to spot the fact that you've got some missile-type transporter vehicles on the move. So, well, you know, I wasn't terribly impressed by it. It doesn't surprise me that they did it, but it doesn't impress me. I don't think it impressed anybody. I don't personally know of anybody who's involved. But again, I say living in the area, yes, of course, we knew what was going on. But it didn't give us any grave cause for concern.
Although I know you weren't involved at this stage, you know, obviously you have very good knowledge of crews and of the Newbury area. Would it have been very difficult to have got those convoys, you know, out and mobile?
If you'd ever seen any of the pictures of those vehicles, and they were on the film, on the newsreels, on television, showing their cross-country performance, they could get to most places. their cross-country performance was quite superb. They were built in Germany, the trucks, for use in what we would call rough terrain, off-road operations in northwest Europe. They could operate most places in Berkshire without any trouble at all. And blocking a road wouldn't have made the slightest bit of difference. They were designed to be used in a war situation. And they would have got to wherever they wanted to go. No, there was no problem with that at all. Very sophisticated communications as well to keep in touch.
But would it have been very visible to an enemy, you know, sort of tracking it?
Yes.
Was that a defect, do you think, of the system?
It's very difficult to tone down a vehicle that size. But the idea is to move out, to stop, to redeploy, to keep moving every so often. It does take a while. I mean, our targeting system was such that we could retarget our vehicles from virtually wherever they stopped or en route. The comparable system opposing us was not as easily retargeted, as far as I know. So the idea was to keep them on the move. Not difficult. I mean, there's certain things that are highly desirable and certain things that you would wish to achieve in terms of camouflage and deception, but you can't have everything. And providing a vehicle, the nature of which we have for the cruise missile, that was very tactically mobile, capable of going virtually anywhere. All right, it's toned down, but it doesn't matter if you covered it with camouflage nets. If you've got 200 dissident tribeswomen sitting down the road flashing lights and making V-signs at the guards, it doesn't matter what you do to it. So the idea is just to get it deployed and keep it moving as often as you'd like. Yes. I don't think it was a defect. It was just a defect in the fact that people weren't prepared to let them have an operational chance. But fortunately, we didn't require to do that.
Finally, I think, we're coming to the last episode.
Dragging it out now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, this camp has lasted for over, 11 years now, 81, 92.
Well, there's still some there.
Yes. What do you think of that? The fact that
As a native, I find it ridiculous. I'm incensed by the continued presence there. Apart from making the place look untidy, I don't think any of them have got any local connections, and yet now the missiles have gone. As I said, I give them no credit for getting rid of the missiles. They're now saying, give the common back to the commoners, and that's what they're protesting about. But they forget that commoner is a defined term. There are Greenham commoners. They live in the houses around Greenham Common. And I don't know any of those who are favourably disposed towards these women sitting outside the gate. If they think give the common back to the common people, I'm not so sure if that would apply. It would be very nice to think that parts of Greenham Common could be released back to the public. I told you earlier on that we released the northern sector to Beebont, to the wildlife people. There are still some delightful features of Greenham, and if you open that all up to the public, heaven help us, I think some of those facilities would go. There's better protection on ranges. I mean, I can think now of Tynham on Salisbury Plain, the other little village down at Arishmael Beach, where there are species of flora and fauna that exist only because they're within a protected area. And consequently, I would like to think that some of that protection would continue. My worry, however, is the airfield itself. If you're going to give back a substantial part of Greenham Common, that might sacrifice. I mean, you'd have to sacrifice the runway and all the on-base facilities. Now, heaven help us, we hope the risk of all-out war has gone. But nonetheless, nationally, we must be in a position to defend ourselves, and while the alliance exists, NATO also. And consequently, we must have resources and facilities, and I think Greenham provides a superb facility. And if you forget the military and look at the civil side, something I didn't actually mention, but one of the things I had to practice every year was a simulated arrival, no-notice arrival, of a large civilian passenger aircraft. Greenham Common is not too far offline from Heathrow Airport. And we know, in fact, one of the guys who regularly used to fly light aircraft at Greenham Common and used to do parasending and everything else was a British Airways captain. And at the air show, we met many civilian captains from all the European airlines and American airlines, and they all know of Greenham Common. And if they were taking off in a heavily laden, let's say a jumbo from Heathrow, heading west, and they had a major problem that would require that aircraft to land damn fast, They're not going to turn a large aircraft like that back over the City of London to approach Heathrow and land. They're going to head straight into Greenham Common. And I hope, I assume, the Board of Trade, the Department of Transport are aware of this. I think it is a national resource. And as I said, we would simulate this each year, an exercise, assuming that, you know, literally no notice, there was a civilian airliner inbound to Greenham Common and makes a crash landing on the airfield. It's a big airfield, a long runway, and whilst, you know, jumbo jet might burn out its brakes, might have to land on its belly, at least it'll get down safely. And a darn sight better than in, you know, trying to approach Heathrow. I mean, we don't want another Amsterdam incident. So in that regard, Greenham Common Airfield, just as an airfield, provides a fantastic resource. I don't think the local community, and I say that as a local, would like to see it turned into London's fourth airport, necessarily. That has been speculated upon. I don't think that would happen. Equally, I don't think that the facilities, the missile storage facilities that we've got there, should necessarily be wasted. I don't believe, I don't know, of course, whether there would be a requirement for that facility, but it's pretty high-priced facility with all the latest nuclear protective resource or protective requirements there. It might offer some option to older master. But as I said, that is not for me to surmise. But certainly, as I say, going back to the airfield side, I think it would be a tragedy if we lost Greenham as an airfield. Parts of it we could give up. The administrative sites, the technical sites, some of them could go. The council are looking at them for rehousing people. The school is custom built. It's already there. The sports and leisure facilities are there. Married quarters have been built, will be sold by the Property Services Agency, Defence Lands. You'll see a hell of a big drawdown at Greenham, but that's the vital resource in that airfield is something that I think nationally, from a military point of view and from a flight safety point of view on behalf of civil aviation, my gut feel is that it's something we ought to maintain.
Well, Squadron Leader Meredith, thank you very much indeed for telling me about your time at Greenham. Be very interesting.
Thanks. Okay.